yearning to play a few rounds of Gwent. That ought to set me straight.
Welcome to episode 7 of Commander's Horn, a podcast about Gwent. We are less than a week until open beta, and we are trying to remain calm. Still lots to talk about, so we've got a packed show for you. There's been lots of developer insight on game mechanics, and we have a leader card review to finish. All this and Gwent hype on this episode of Commander's Horn. Welcome back to Commander's Horn, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. I am one of your hosts, Dane McBeard, and I'm joined, as always, by Josh Greyboxer. What have you been up to? How was your weekend?
My weekend was excellent. I missed out on a ton of developer posts in our Discord channel because I went off the grid and went on a bicycling trip in the Laurel Highlands of Pennsylvania.
Boy, between the two of us, it's like someone's away on an important weekend, it feels like. But this one was a real surprise. We had a developer join us in Discord and was just basically treating it like an AMA, ask me anything. We have more to say about that, believe me.
Still but, here.
Yeah, it was, he's still hanging out and he's great. And it's a nice little addition to the chat, believe me. But it was when he first showed up, we're talking about Rethus at this moment. When he first showed up, oh man. Chat was just alive. It was alive, and it was like I couldn't stop looking at my phone wherever I was. I had a bit of a busy weekend too, but I still managed to get a few questions in.
It took hours to catch up to it.
Yeah, a lot of reading, a lot of the best kind of reading, scrounging for that info. So yeah, I've been doing my daily stream of The Witcher 2, and that's been going well. So that was since our last podcast, which we recorded last Wednesday, it is Wednesday today, I have streamed 4 days, Thursday, Friday, and Monday, Tuesday, trying to get a feel of what it is like to be streaming daily. And it's interesting. I think I picked a nice time slot, the 3 to 6 Eastern, late night in the European regions usually. And I get a, you know, steady amount of viewers from Discord that are enjoying the game and hopefully enjoying my playthrough, even though I suck sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes.
I think your stream has been pretty fun to watch so far. You're playing a good time for US too, because I don't know about you, but during my workday, I can put Twitch up and kind of watch you as I work. I think it's a really good time slot, 3 p.m. I've been checking it out every day if I can.
Yeah, if you're a 9-to-5 worker in North America on the East Coast and you want a little late lunch distraction, I'm there for you. 1 p.m.
He's in there sneaking in the front door.
Yeah, sneaking in the front door and getting my ass handed to me by Letho. But I did beat him. Oh my God, what a fight. What a fight.
Yeah, that
nobody
so
told
fun.
Me. Nobody told. You know what? I don't even want to spoil it. It's a very difficult fight, even taking into account that I'm not even playing it on a really hard difficulty. And he seemed harder than anything I did in The Witcher 3 in memory. So it was good. I enjoyed it very much.
Hey, it's how a Witcher versus Witcher fight should be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's not, I think in The Witcher 3 you fight a Witcher at one point, but it was really not anything like the sound beating that Letho can hand out to you in a second.
Yeah, that
it
guy
just
was
just can fall apart in a moment.
Yeah, he could really wreck you, and he's got that big kind of like sturdy frame. He's already indomitable enough just listening to him talk, and then when he can fight as well as he can intimidate, man.
Yeah, he works out for sure. But that's been my thing. What have you been up to?
Yeah, so I've been pushing to the end of Blood and Wine in my Death March playthrough. But more importantly, I have this week been playing listeners and community decks on Tabletop. As everybody knows, there's a Gwent version of Tabletop. We mentioned it last week. And it has all the cards from Gwent Database. So what I've been doing is trying to gather deck builds from members of our Discord and Twitter. And putting them on display. I've been streaming plays of listener and community decks on Twitch and, just trying to basically get a live feel for these people's theory crafting. And so far, it's been pretty well. I've had a couple of great decks.
Yeah. A little head start on the experience. Yeah, you still have to kind of, there's a little DIY, some assembly required when you play on tabletop, but we won't have to do that for much longer. But we have a lot to say about that, I think, when we start talking about the remainder of our leaders, leader card kind of deck synergies built around those leaders. We actually have a little bit of kind of hands-on experience, sort of, that we can relate to, which is really helpful.
Had ourselves a battle last night.
Long live King Bran. That's all I got to say. So, Commander's Horn posts weekly, recording on Wednesdays, posting on Thursdays.
You want to tell them what we're planning?
Yes. There is going to be live podcasts in the future, and we're really excited to bring that to you. Just working out the tech. But we want to bring a live format, a bit more of an interactive show, possibly over Twitch with the both of us, and putting some extra content out there with the Commander's Horn brand.
What do you think about maybe playing some of our users' decks some more?
Yeah, that's one of the ideas. We can definitely take user submissions. I would like to do that on my stream, and as well as on the Commander's Horn stream as well. And we can take those decks, we can do a co-op. Me and Grey Boxer play together, and we kind of have that commentary and discuss our choices as we go. I know that that's a popular format for some for some streamers. Playing listener decks, and maybe even playing some community members or against each other. Lots of ideas. And all we need is just two people willing to play Gwent. So I'm sure we're going to find a lot of those people. And in order to keep that robust content coming, we would always love to hear from you.
Send us your ideas for any live content you want to see.
Yeah, any live content you want to see, any topics you want to hear us cover, send all of your emails to commandershornpodcast@gmail.com and find us on Twitter @commandershorn. Thanks so much for your emails, tweets, and comments.
And hey, if you like the show, submit a review on iTunes. We might read it on air.
I think we would definitely read it on air. No intention to toot our own horn or anything, but these ratings and reviews really help our podcast, especially in the early going, helps our listing on iTunes. And as you may know, this is a completely independent podcast, so all the support from our listeners is greatly appreciated. If in your travels you are able to leave a rating or a review, a like, a subscribe, a follow, whatever you want, these are invaluable to us. So thank you in advance for that.
Yeah. And we read them all. So
yeah, we catch it all emails, all tweets, and we want to respond to every last one of them. So thanks for sending those comments, and continue to send them through email, Twitter, Reddit, wherever you see us posting. We would love to hear from you.
More on that later.
But for now, let's get into the news that is affecting the Gwent sphere this week, right after this. So, Warsaw Games Week has come and gone, took place Thursday to Sunday, starting on October 13th and ended on the 16th of October. 4 days of a game convention up there in Poland, up there in Warsaw specifically. And there's a lot of Gwent stuff there. Gwent had a huge booth there, as they tend to do for these European cons. And there is even a special treat, a great match between two very well-known Polish Hearthstone players, Nimsz and Lothar, two heroes of mine, to be honest. Nimsz, one of the first podcasters I listened to in a video game format when he used to be on Turn 2 with Frodan. And Lothar is just a fantastic player. And yeah, they're just really great players. They're really great personalities, great casters. So it would have been a real treat to be there. But we have a rough idea of what happened.
Yeah.
Sounds like everybody had fun.
It seems like we have a message from our reporter in Warsaw on this event.
That's true. We had somebody reach out to us as we asked kindly. We did have a kind response. Now this is somebody who sent an email to me before. So I'm going to say friend of the show, and I'm going to get his name pronounced correctly. Davilchik. And I was calling him Devil Chick before, which I think sounded more like a sexy Halloween costume. And I don't think that's fair.
It's very Americanized.
When you have such a strong portmanteau of English and Polish, and you are calling yourself the devil, I think you deserve a proper pronunciation. So thank you, Devil Chick, for sending me the correct pronunciation, and I really hope I'm getting it right. Nothing
been
but
pretty
respect.
Good on pronunciation so far in the cast. So
we never do it in jest. I only ever mean respect. So our correspondent was able to answer a couple of questions. One of the main questions that he had was, are you able to watch your friends' games? And we know that there is not going to be a spectator mode in closed beta. While this is disappointing, when you say stuff like not in closed beta, it makes me believe that it is something that is being discussed. So the tournament broadcaster in me that's screaming to get out makes me very happy to know that spectator mode will be coming, hopefully. I mean, that's not really an official statement, but just an assumption I'm making from that.
Yeah, and I think spectator mode would really help what we want to do on our podcast and with our streams and content, because it would help us either work together to stream games and stream decks that we're playing as a Commander's Horn unit. And also, it's really good to get strategy down and get inside other people's heads and figure out how to play through these decks and get some wins. Mm-hmm. He also said that he saw a lot of new players to Gwent checking out Gwent at Warsaw Games Week. He said that while, you know, new players who've only played Gwent in The Witcher 3 could feel kind of odd playing the new Gwent, which is just, as we call it, Gwent now, they should be fine after a few matches. They sort of figure out about the wounding mechanics and figure out about how weather works and how buffing works. So I think that this will be new person friendly beta experience if anybody gets in, and people who never even tried the beta should be able to play the full game after playing a few matches and getting used to it.
Yeah, for sure. And being so close to the game like you and I are, and a lot of the people that listen to the podcast and follow things on Reddit and follow things on the official forums, we're very, very close to the information that we get, so we can take a lot of stuff for granted. And I think that there's definitely a new player experience that's going to be harder for us to truly understand, but I'm always thinking about it. And there is a tutorial that will be in the game. We don't know what that looks like, and I don't even think that's ready for beta. But definitely playing the game, we've seen every iteration. I feel like I've had to forget more than I've had to learn because of how many different iterations of things have come through. But yeah, there are going to be people that come directly from Witcher 3. They saw the announcement at E3. They hit the sign up for beta, and then they forgot about it. And then they're all going to come marching back when the beta keys go out, which at this time have not been released yet. We'll talk about that in just a second. I do want to get to the end of some of the comments here that were provided to us. Last comment I wanted to mention in the email that he sent over was that they feel rather balanced, except for a specific card that he thinks is overpowered, and that is Stamelford's Tremor, which is a special card that removes 2 strength from every unit on your opponent's battlefield.
Yeah, that's a big one.
The main point about Stamelford's Tremor is that people may have thought that it was deserving of a nerf is that it is strong. It does take 2 strength away from every unit on the opponent's battlefield. But also there's a card called Lacerate that takes 2 strength off an opponent's row. So why would you ever play Lacerate if you could play Stamelford's Tremor? So we thought, okay, well, Stamelford's Tremor is going to get buffed to silver status, or it's going to do maybe only 1 damage. But the change actually came to Lacerate. Lacerate is now stronger. I believe it removes 3 strength from the opponent's row, and Stamelford's does 2 strength to removes 2 strength from the entire battlefield. Stamelford still feels stronger. Still feels like you could get a larger gain out of it.
Yeah, and the thing is with Lacerate is it was completely unused before, and I think if they had nerfed Stamelford's to 1, it might have been completely unused. It would have been easily beaten by Lacerate, because -1 to everything is really not going to affect any cards except for recently weathered cards. So it would have limited usage in normal decks, whereas now both Stamelford's and Lacerate have place in a lot of different decks.
Yeah, for sure. And dealing just 1 damage, there's enough cards out there that do kind of like that pinging, and they're usually the bronze faction specific cards. Clan Brockvar Archer is one of the cards that I'm thinking of. So it seems like there'd be less of a need to occupy a slot with that if it was just doing 1 damage. Like, there's really only so much, the ceiling gets much lower in that case. So, and I think that with Lacerate being stronger, it's definitely good against row specific decks. And I also think that Manticore Venom has a place as well against decks that copy a lot of specific units and kind of exploit that copying mechanic. So I think that all 3 of those cards, I kind of see them as sort of a mass damaging type of special card structure that they've put in there. I think they all have their place now, but I'll have to see with the experience that comes with playing, because we're going to play soon.
Yep.
We're going to play so soon. We are less than 6 days away at the time of this recording. So I'm just going to say we're under a week, because that's exciting enough to say. It doesn't matter when you're listening to this. We are under a week away, and closed beta keys have still not arrived. But is that strange?
Does it matter? We know they're going to be released soon.
Yeah. Quotation soon. soon TM for sure. I mean, they're going to have to release them before Tuesday. So it's, you know, just set your goal on getting your beta key on Monday and you will be nothing but pleased, I think.
It's the favorite quote of developers, soon.
Soon, yeah. Well, my favorite, yeah, just, you know, set your expectations low and just be pleasantly surprised all the time. It's the high expectations. I think that's where fans can find themselves in a little bit of frustration. You just got to just let it come. You know, we're getting a great game coming our way, and it's pretty much fueled by fan passion. I honestly do believe that. So just, you know, just let it come. Let it wash over you. It's going to be really good when that key comes. Just feel. Just take some time. Be mindful. Feel all those emotions when you see that beta key. I hope you all get one. I would feel bad if anybody listening to this is like listening with this resentment. Like, oh, you got.
They're listening. They're listening over a week from now. Nice. And they're like, oh, I can't believe it. you know what I'm doing though? They might have gotten one, but it might be in their spam folder.
It might be in your spam folder, so you got to check. And I strongly suggest you sign up at gog.com. That's gog.com. If it's anything like Kill the Servers, and I have every reason to believe it will be exactly like Kill the Servers, that you will be playing through the gog.com client, and the game will be one of the games that you can play, very similar to how Steam launches games or how the Battle.net application launches their games. It's going to be on gog.com before it's anywhere else, if it's anywhere else. So having an account will definitely help speed things up. And just remember that this is a beta. And when you get in there, just approach it as, you know, there's going to be a very nascent meta. No one's really going to have the hours and hours and hours of experience and analysis and stuff that comes out. Just, you know, just enjoy the game. Find out what works. Find out how everything feels. You will enjoy yourself. Definitely just come into this. Just try to have the most fun possible. That's what I'm doing.
So what you're saying is go in and prepare to get spanked by people like Mahakaman who play incredibly well and just try to have fun while you struggle.
Yeah. You may struggle for sure. I mean, I said this on my stream yesterday. I don't care if the release time turns on in the Eastern time zone at 3 o'clock in the morning. I will be playing that game. I will. I'm going to find out when it starts, or if I don't hear when it's starting, I'm going to stay up until it's midnight in CEST. And if nothing happens, I'm going to go to sleep with trepidation and just be like, okay.
You're not going to bed because Santa's coming.
Exactly. I can't sleep. You know, I got the cookies out. Oh my God. So it's, so if it's like 9 a.m. and it's, if it's 9 a.m. Warsaw time and I got to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and turn my stream on and just proceed to get spanked for 10 games in a row because I'm a little sleepy, that's okay because I'm always going to take notes. Why am I losing? What is looking good right now? Why is something that I thought good not good? And the thing that I'm sure is going to happen is someone's going to say, wow, this card is way better than we thought. And I don't know what that card is yet, but I'm sure that's going to happen.
To answer your question, number one, Vess is always looking good. And for the second question, the cards that you're going to be afraid of are the Clan Brokvar Archers. Okay.
Oh, you think Vess is going to be the superstar?
No, I'm saying you said which cards look good, and I just said Vess.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, she does look good. I mean, come on. Premium art, please. So. Yeah. And you think the Clan Brokvar Archers are not as good? Or are we talking about the one that pings 3 or the one that pings for 5?
The one that pings for 5.
Yeah, I think that's the Dol Blathana Archer. Yeah, that card's good. That's a good card. I think they're both good in their own ways. I think all the bronze cards are going to have a place. But when it comes down to like when things get refined to a competitive level, I'm waiting for that.
Oh, yeah. And that'll happen after, I think, you know, some days of the beta being out and people collecting cards. Depending on the method by which we collect cards in the beta, they haven't been very clear on that.
Well, I do know that on my GOG account, when I log into Kill the Servers, Gwent, and I can see that I have one crate left to open, I also have like 100 Pop-Tart looking things, and then I have one paper crown, I think. So it's fun just to think like what the value of those things are.
What does that even mean? That's what I'm saying.
How many Pop-Tarts for a barrel is what I want to know.
That's 100.
Answer me that. Anyway, just the last piece of news we wanted to cover. Like we set up near the top of the show, we have been having some developer interaction on the forums and in Gwent Discord at at an alarming rate. Red hot responses pretty much at any time.
I get great. It. He said red.
It is, yeah. Red, please. CD Projekt Red, of course. So we've got a lot of little extra nuanced information that's come to light. It's really hard to, like, where do you even start with that information? But I do know that, like, Stefan, if you ever had any information about the tokens or how specific cards interact with each other, like, just to give you an example, Josh and I were playing a fake game last night, and it came down that I had played my Skellige spy, Donar and Hindar, I think his name is pronounced.
Yeah.
Josh, you were playing Eithne, which is also something that I'm struggling to pronounce.
No, and I have notes on her. Oh, I have notes on her pronunciation. It's Eithne.
Oh, it's Eithne. Okay.
Eithne, yeah.
I was thinking it was going to be like Sheila, where you look at the word and it's just not what you think at all.
Yeah,
but Eithne. Okay. Yeah, okay, so Eithne. So Eithne, leader ability, is to take a unit and replay it. So not play a copy of it, not put it in your hand, not anything like that. You just replay it. So the question was, when you use that ability to replay the spy, does the spy actually replay itself disloyally back onto my side of the board? Josh thought, maybe not. It just plays the effect, the when played effect, and doesn't actually play the disloyal tag.
Which would have been super OP.
Which would have been super OP when you think about it. Basically, your opponent gives you a spy, and then you can just take that, and no risk is involved. So I'm kind of glad that I was correct and that the spy does come back around. So that's just an example of something, like, it's kind of like we got a little hotline at the moment, and it's much appreciated, very useful.
And anyone has the advantage of knowing the answers to these kinds of questions by being in Discord chat. He's answering everyone's questions, the developer we have in there. And like we were talking about earlier, if we're starting the beta and we're confused, if we're, you know, we're getting crushed, if myself, for example, if I'm getting repeatedly pummeled by Scoia'tael decks as I have been this past week, I want to know how those cards work and I want to know how the traps activate. Those kind of questions can be answered in our Discord chat. So
yeah. But not to make anybody feel jealous about the Discord kind of privilege, Rethis has been very active on the forums as well, and almost all things have been addressed on the official Gwent forums. It's just you have to just do a little looking for the tag in which there has been a CD Projekt Red response. But there's a lot of activity right now. All will be revealed soon, but it's kind of nice to get that extra peek.
Yeah, so if you're not sure if you can get double borked with a leader ability...
We have more on that later.
Or developers take on a top tier competitive deck that has 103 cards. Rethis is here to give you the inside scoop.
The 103 card, by the way, that's the meta. So whatever you think is going to happen, it's all about the 103 cards.
You just have to press up, up, down, down, triangle, triangle, and you get to increase the upper limit of the deck size, and you can get 103 cards.
There's no triangle key on my keyboard. That means I can't cheat. I can't cheat. It's probably good, though. I shouldn't be tempted.
Gamepad meta.
Gamepad meta, yeah. Okay. So yeah, so there's been a lot of developer interaction, lots of Gwent activity in the world, and we are there. We're so close. So we're just trying to keep calm. It's the calm before the storm. It's the calm before the beta cast.
You're so excited.
I'm so excited. I need to just kind of temper my emotions a little bit. For Gwent coming out this week. Okay. Anyway. With that, we have more cards to talk about. There is still lots of stuff that we didn't cover in our last cast, so we want to get right down to that. We have Scoia'tael and Skellige to talk about, and we are going to dive right into it after this. So last week, or maybe even a week and a half to 2 weeks ago at this point, we received the full asterisk beta card list from GwentDB. They did some digging there, so we got to see all the cards that are going to be in the closed beta, especially all of the new leaders. So with all the leaders on the table and seeing how all the cards have changed, all the very faction-specific cards, we have a rough idea of how each of these decks might make the best use of the cards that we have seen. Last week, we talked about Northern Realms and Monsters, and we had a great time doing that. But Scoia'tael and Skellige is on the menu today, and we're going to start talking about our Kill the Servers superstar, Bruverhoog, one of my favorite cards in Kill the Servers, and I still think this guy's really, really good. His leader ability is choose a silver card from your deck and play it.
Yep.
So I've said this a number of times in many different locations. I think that as long as silver cards are good, this card's going to be good. And with the limitation of Scorch going to silver, Commander's Horn going to silver, Decoy going to silver, it means that silver cards are indeed good because these are all good cards that you may want in a pinch. So Bruver's always going to get that. And if any silver card becomes really meta-defining, Bruver is going to make sure that you always have that card in your hand. So I just think that he's good in, like, synergistically, there is, it's almost like the options are very wide. I think that he's always going to be able to do what he does very well. Skill-wise, I don't think that there's like a very high ceiling, or it's just silver cards are good and I need this silver card, and it also gains me a turn to do that because I don't have to spend that card in my hand. I can just spend it right out of my deck. So he's very powerful. And I think that there's a couple cards that do very well. Personally, I think those special cards that I mentioned are very good. And then there's other cards like perhaps Murktabraka, Morin, anything that can deal damage to the board or many units at once. Just being able to bring those out and make sure that you have them every single game, I think is going to be the best way to use Bruver. What do you think about him?
Well, I mean, for me, it's really hard to imagine when Bruverhoog will not be useful. For me, any card draw mechanic that allows you to choose from your deck, see also King Bran, is going to be very powerful. Bruverhoog can draw a Decoy, for example, as you mentioned at the top here, and that can replay Medics, that can replay Spies. You're talking about getting instant card advantage on demand, or doubling your units, or, you know, a Skellige Storm at the right time. I mean, there's any number of options here.
Yeah, it just makes your gameplay very flexible. It's kind of like, I look at the heroes as two different kinds of heroes. There's heroes that are like Aridin, where you just build a good deck and you make Aridin your leader and you have a strong ability with a deck that's just good. And I think Bruver kind of falls in that territory as well. There's more than the other idea is that there's leaders that have very specific abilities that you would more so build your deck around. And you would have a very specific point in which you wanted to use it, or very specific cards in which you would want to use them on, like Full Test in this case, or even King Bran, which we talked about.
Yeah, he's a very strong leader. Another strong leader is going to be Aethne, not Aethne, not Athene, Aethne, right?
Hey, but use your own voice, everybody. You know, the world is yours. You can call her whatever you want. I'm sure she won't mind.
Aethne is another leader for the Skoytel, and this is a card that allows you to replay the effect of any card on your side of the board. And that counts, like we mentioned earlier, a spy played by your opponent. However, we do know that this activates their disloyalty and shoots them back over to your opponent's side. But again, this is a really nice way to get a free spy card. With Aethne, you can also double Bork. She can use the ability of any card, including gold cards.
So we think that it would reset the timer on Bork. So like he would count down, he would do his ability, and then it would just kind of bring it back up to three again.
Yeah, that's how it should work.
Yeah. I mean, it would make for a long turn, but it would make for a pretty oppressive, like, that would be a turn that I think I'd want to pass if I felt like I navigated the first Borking.
Yeah.
Well enough. And then the leader ability came down and that timer went back up to three again. It would be like, I don't know. That's something I definitely would feel like I need to experience to understand how that feels.
Yeah, and so playing around the first Bork is rough enough, but the counter to a double Bork is a pass.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And I actually watched the King Blacktooth video on the Skoytel that just came out recently, and he mentions that if you have Geralt, 12 strength gold, on your side of the board, and he gets hit with Radovid, you can actually play Aethne to pick him up, and he will change from 2 back to 12 because it replays him and therefore removes the wound.
Yeah, I had a speculation that would be another use for her, to make her just more flexible. Essentially, she can heal a unit, and in this case, healing a gold unit definitely has its value there. So, yeah, it could be very strong against Radovid. But the thing about Radovid is, if I was using Radovid, I would want to destroy whatever I was hitting, even if it involved a loss of 2 or 3 strength and value. I think, especially if I was playing against Aethne. So, I think that would become clear very quickly that would not be a good good thing to do to Geralt Swordmaster.
Right.
For sure. But she has that nice flexibility. She can bring unit strength back up. She can replay effects. Any card that has a very strong effect, Aithne works very well with. So these are, you know, like Hawker Healer, Elven Mercenary in the right deck. Once again, Morin, even stronger. So she pings for 3 twice on the battlefield. Just being able to activate that again, that may be the round. Yorveth does another. He removes 6 strength. If you wanted to use your ability on Yorveth, it's kind of like you have a mini Radovid ability. So it's almost as if your faction ability becomes a real jack of all trades based on what's in your deck. And the ability to replay a spy without having to use a decoy is going to make her very strong, very flexible as well. I think there's going to be a lot of different ways to play her. One last thing about her, I think she's going to work very well in a neophyte style deck where you would use the Vread Vanguard to create 2 commando neophytes, and perhaps you would use Aithne's ability to create 2 more. So having 4 on the board right away is very threatening. It would probably demand some sort of action from your opponent because you'd have a deck that would take full advantage of Neophyte Madness, I think.
You know, my idea is you have the Vread Vanguard and you play 2 of those, and so you have 4 Neophytes plus the Vread Vanguards. Then you play a Hawker Healer and +3 to all of them, and then you Aithne the Hawker Healer.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff you can do. I think and each stage of that, what you just said, each stage of that, as an opponent watching it happen, I would have to decide when I needed to do something about it. But it seems by the time the first Hawker Healer came down, I would regret not doing anything. And then when the replayed Hawker Healer happened, I would cry if I had no way of removing these gigantic cards. Yeah, I think very flexible, very strong. And the final leader we have for Scoia'tael is Francesca. And Francesca's a tougher one to analyze when we're talking about synergy, because it's almost as if she adds a new mechanic to the way you can play the round without actually affecting the board in any way whatsoever. So what she does, you essentially get a second redraw phase in which you can swap 3 cards out of your hand for 3 new cards.
Yeah, she's a super mulligan.
I mean, the first thing I thought of, that if there's a disgusting combo you want to have and you build it into your deck, it's almost assured that with 6 redraws, you will get those cards that you need. And additionally, as with all leader abilities, it gains you a turn when you do this, so you do not have to spend any cards on that particular turn. That's going to be something that's powerful for all the leaders. But I think in this case, taking a turn, not spending cards, and then refining your hand, there's lots of value there. And I know that there's going to be a deck that figures it out and has that power play that is able to execute that almost 100% of the time with the redraws.
Yeah, and I think that this card could have the potential to be incredibly powerful as a Scoia'tael leader, even compared with the power of Bruvrahoug and Aithne, because there's a few CD Projekt Red posts on the forums indicating that they had tested 2-6 being the mulligan amount at the beginning of Gwent when they were developing the standalone game. And they found that when you had 6 mulligans, you were often drawing ideal hands over and over again, which made play more predictable and therefore easier to win. Francesca grants you this ability. You can draw your ideal hand, but you don't even have to do it at the start of the game. You can wait till after turn 1 is over and you get your 2 more cards. So it also takes up a turn. So it's a good stall, and it's a way to create a path to victory in the middle of a match.
Yeah, it seems like... when developers talk about cards that, because when you say that she was comparable to Bruvrahoug, like, I immediately thought, I don't know. I think that Francesca, in my mind, is the weakest of the three. But when developers start talking about stuff like that, that's where it gets into the territory of, is this the card that people are going to find out is a lot better than speculated? Things like that. I know that when they talk about tuning a card specifically, it means that at one point it was in a tunable place where, like, this is too strong or this is too weak, and then this is just right. So that's why I think that, you know, as things get refined and as the beta goes through, that we're really going to see kind of where the stars lie and where things are kind of out of control.
Yeah,
Priscilla, cough, cough.
Yeah,
I don't know, man. That card seems really good.
I wouldn't know. I've built about 4 or 5 Northern Realms decks with Priscilla and played about 10 games and haven't drawn her once.
Well, here's something that I just saw I think I would need some for sure confirmation, but from what I understand, a post in the forum, Priscilla only draws units and not all, it's not any card. So she's actually better than I thought she was because she doesn't fizzle spells anymore or fizzle special cards. She doesn't kind of, if you build your strategy around having like reinforcement perhaps or decoy or clear weather, you need that. She won't just like kind of burn those spells if you're unlucky and that's what she pulls. She's just going to flood the board. So now I'm worried that she's going to be kind of operator level scary. We'll see.
Well, and there was actually a recent post in our Discord chat about the use of Priscilla. I could explain it. It was a match between Meerkats and Mahakam, and two of our most skilled Gwent players in Discord. And would you like me to share this?
Yes, absolutely.
I think it's hilarious.
I think it's fine. It's totally fine.
So these two play a lot of games together, and they're both very good. So the games tend to be close. They do good deck building, and one of them, I believe, both of them actually were playing Northern Realms with Priscilla in it. And so Meerkats says that he started round two with an after horn board composed of 12 strength golden Olgierd. Somehow he had a 58 strength gold botchling and a 12 strength Regis vampire form. And this actually drew Roach out of the deck thanks to Regis.
Oh my God. Yeah. So we can't say that. I mean, we know the swallow potion's a thing and there's Commander's Horn is a thing, but we aren't necessarily saying that this is like a real thing that could happen, but it's, you know, you could make a case that it did happen.
And not to be outdone, Mahakamin had a 32 strength botchling of his own on his side. And he says that when Meerkats played his last medic, it RNG'd up another medic, which chose Priscilla from the graveyard, who pulled both Geralt Igni, which scorched Mahakamin's 32 strength botchling, and it pulled Bork. So Priscilla's working God. As intended.
Oh my God. It's like you thought operator is bad. Now she pulls two cards. I mean, it's from your own deck, but I mean, when I found out that she doesn't pull special cards, that was, that made me start sweating.
Retha's post was amazing after this. He literally just said, hard to follow, but sounded okay.
Sounds okay. Hey, I mean, I'll tell you what it does sound like. It sounds really fun and sounds like, If there was a recording of that match in Gwent, that would be a showcase for sure. We're getting off topic though. Priscilla is super strong, but let's keep going because we want to talk about Skellige next. So once again, one of our kill the server superstars, Kraken Crate. His leader ability has changed slightly since kill the servers, in that he still spawns two end crate warriors, but the end crate warriors are no longer seven. Well, they are seven, but yeah. They come out and then they hurt themselves immediately. They remove two strength from themselves. So
they're tripping over their own axe.
That's good. They're tripping over their own axes, this is a change to the card itself. The Clan and Crate. Is it Warrior or is it Clan and Crate?
It's Warrior.
There's another one. There's another Clan and Crate card. Anyway, this particular one has changed. So the card itself, in general, you play it as a seven and it hurts itself to five. And Kraken Crate just happens to play two of this same unit. So what do you think about Kraken Crate?
I think that this wound component works in some decks. If you're building a deck with the Axemen who receive +3 for each wound, each time a unit on their side of the board is wounded, you're talking about giving these Axemen a +6 buff a piece. Mm-hmm. If you've got a couple on each, you know, on your row when you play Kraken Crate, you can really put a lot of strength on the board with three turns. You can put up something to the effect of like, oh, what's, I can't do math, 10 plus 26 with just three cards. And they're all different strength numbers too, so they're not really subject to Scorch and, you know, they're not going to be removed.
Mm. Yeah, it's funny because I like Kraken Crate. I like the idea of spawning units that have a lot of synergy with stuff like Warcry is a special card that I see definitely in a deck like this. And you'd build a deck around wounding things in order to make, you know, like you said, the Clan Tuisark, Axemen, that is like the unit I think that would be the star in a deck like this. But if you were building around a wounding deck, you might want to include Young Berserkers and the Brockvar Hunters, maybe to ping your own Berserkers. But that doesn't really necessarily work like directly with what Crack is doing. And I think that having a wounded unit and spawning wounded units, yes, you have your Axemen, but there's not as much synergy that I see with Crack that perhaps some of these other cards get. So I feel like the kind of deck that we'll see with Crack at the helm, they're going to be more of the same. I think there's going to be less ways to play. I would like to be wrong. That's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, he's kind of a one-dimensional leader as far as Gwent goes. Obviously, the flavor, Crack on Crate is an incredible leader in Skellige, but I think this card is underwhelming. I think the leader ability is overshadowed by the other two.
Yeah, the other two. So the first of those other two, Harold the Cripple. I like this guy.
This
guy's good. I haven't had a chance to really... This is a guy I want to experience playing with and against for sure. But Harold the Cripple's ability is deal 4 damage to all of your opponent's units that have already had their strength reduced. So it seems to me that... you would want to, if you were on your turn in which you thought, okay, I'm going to just abuse my opponent with my leader ability, you're dropping stuff like Tremors or Lacerate, or you're playing your Savage Bear, which is pinging units on the board. You've got your Clan Brockvar Archer, which is doing 1 damage to 3 different units. You've got Holger Blackhand that's pinging 3 different units. You have weather effects, really anything that does damage in multiples to your opponent's board sets up your following turn to devastate that board with an additional 4 damage to everything. So really, I think that there is not, contrary to Crack and Crate, there are so many ways, too many ways you could actually make Harold work. Like, you wouldn't put all of those things in your deck. But the multi-damage spells and just kind of hoping your opponent doesn't have a lot of gold cards on their side of the board. That's just kind of how I see that playing out. And there's just a lot of different avenues you can take.
Yeah, I played a version of a deck that you just mentioned there. It didn't have every unit that you mentioned. I didn't have as many Tremors and Lacerates as I wanted. I had more weather units. So I played almost a Skellige weather deck with Harold at the helm. And that was the one game that me and Mahakaman played about 8 cards apiece or 9 cards apiece in round 2. And it was just a matter of like weathering and re-weathering and him using the buffing cards that he had in his deck to bring everybody back up to play around Harold the Cripple. He was incredibly aware of the fact that I had weathered his entire board and that he would have to play around Harold. And so it forced him to play a lot of his buffing cards. But buffing is a really good counter to Harold the Cripple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you'd really have to buff it, though, because he's doing 4 damage to everything. And if you've played something like Ragnarok or if you've played weather on a majority of his units... clear weather or bust, I think, or having gold cards kind of ready. It's just, it seems like when you have that ability kind of line up and the stars align and you're able to just crunch everything on their board, it's there's no way you're coming back from that round if it's executed correctly. But again, I have to see. All right, our last leader, my favorite one, and I think that I might be a believer. I was going to start with Northern Realms, but now I think I like King Bran a lot.
Yeah,
this guy is great.
Is that because of his experience as a veteran of the Battle of Branna?
Oh, yeah, the Battle of Branna with Branna Byrne.
No, Branna Bran was his wife.
Branna. No, that's the correct one. It's not funny when I'm right. It's funny when I'm wrong. Anyway, The point is, King Bran is great, and I made a deck last night. I want to try a King Bran deck because I feel like maybe I'm just missing it, but a lot of people weren't talking about this guy as much as they were talking about some of the other leaders. But the playstyle that this... So his leader ability, discard 2 cards into your graveyard and draw any card you want out of your deck. So let's just dissect that. Discard 2 cards, that's not a bad thing, considering the cards that Skellige has to offer. Draw any card out of your deck is so good. It is so good.
It's a gold.
It's so good. It's if you think you're losing advantage from King Bran, it's just drawing any card out of your deck. I cards are God in this game. Like, the more cards you have in your hand, the better position you are to win. Anybody would agree with you, I think. But if there was one thing that would make you consider going down in cards, it would be to draw any card. So, yeah, you were losing a card Although you are, again, gaining a turn by using your ability, but still, you're drawing any card out of your deck. So I had a great time playing this deck. There's a very fluid, almost surreal play style to this deck in that a lot of cards that I put into my deck, and the big ones are the Queen's Guard and Ceres. You want your Queen's Guards in the graveyard, and you want another Queen's Guard to pull them all out. You yep. want your Priestess to pull your Queen's Guard out over and over again. You want to get Ceres down on round one or round two, so you can pull her out again next turn. You may want to use King Brand to draw Ceres, so you don't accidentally discard her into the graveyard, which is a real bummer for
yep.
sure.
Yep, you don't want to do that.
But and the last one that I think has a lot of potential is the Clan Endcrate Raider. That was the other Endcrate card that I was confused about, which states, when discarded, play this card. I mean, so it's just like, essentially, you are losing the card, but you're still being able to play the card. So the disadvantage is just lessened and lessened. It just starts to be, all parts of his leader ability are actually very, very good. So you're playing cards, you're discarding cards, cards are coming out of your deck, cards are coming out of your graveyard. Like at any given time, it's
coming
like cards are just
ears.
Sort of flying all over the place, in the deck, to the graveyard, from the graveyard to the battlefield, in your hand. It's just, you want to put a ton of medics into this kind of deck, and the play style just felt just remarkably different from any other leader, and I loved it.
Yeah, you played me with this leader twice last night, and yeah. we had a close game that I lost. Mm-hmm. We had a close game that I won, and at all times King Brand was an integral part of your strategy, and you played him at times, and usually I feel like you played him with the Unkrite Raiders. You just kept putting them down on the board, and I was just like, there's no downside when you have the Raiders yeah. in your hand to playing King Brand.
Yeah, and Queen's Guards were always there. I never actually got all three of them out at any given time, but you can easily make that happen. I just never drew all three of them into my hand. I think I'd keep them all if I had them, and then I'd use my ability. I'd discard two of them, draw the card I want, probably Ceres if I didn't have her, and then next turn I'd play the Queen's Guard. The other two Queen's Guards come out of the graveyard, buff Ceres by three.
Right.
And that's, you know,
yeah.
it just feels good, and it feels cool. I didn't know how much I was going to like it until I played it. And this is with a deck that I've refined it since. I had a bunch of stuff in there that I maybe shouldn't have had. And I think that I think I've got it down to a good deck. And I can't wait to find out if it's good, why it's good, if it's not good, what I need to change to make it good, all that stuff.
It was fun to play against you, so.
Yeah. So King Brand, my favorite, I think, of the... I love Bruver. Me and Bruver, we go way back. Me and B-Hoog, we love each other. But
you and Bruver bruvs, huh?
Yeah, we go way back, like car seats and spinal cords. But King Brand might just be my new favorite of these six that we just talked. You like that? That's from 30 Rock. I'm not taking credit on that joke. Tracy Jordan. So those are your remaining six leaders. We've covered all 12. We've talked about the kind of decks that we can expect being assembled by these leaders. And now all we have to do is just sit with our mouths watering for Gwent to come out so we can really kind of see the spread, find out how we get these leaders. Because if I don't have King Brand from the get-go, I'm just going to start cracking barrels until I get him, I think.
You're going to crack barrels.
Yes, I'm going to crack some crates. No, I'm just taking that joke out. Let's edit the bad jokes out of this podcast.
This is terrible.
May we always be funny. Great. I'm not going to cut this. I'm not going to cut that part.
Don't you dare.
With that rousing discussion of pronunciation and card synergy, let's get into our feedback section because we have some stuff we want to talk about. And we'll be right back. So we have a few people reaching out to us today, and it wasn't just Devilchuk with his email. It was also a couple of mentions on Twitter, and there's a lot of forum stuff that we want to talk about as well, as we always do celebrate the community here on our Community Corner. So first of all, we had a tweet from @SwoopSauce. He says, "Enjoy the podcast, good work, but I think you could have reviewed all the cards and made it 2+ hours.
We're an independent podcast.
Look, I love it. I love hearing, honestly, like getting a comment like this. It means that you want to listen to us talk for 2 hours. Oh, God bless you. I really love it.
Really?
Yeah. There's a thing called web hosting, and 2-hour podcast is not something that we can do all the time. Not to say we'll never do a 2-hour podcast. Who knows what's going to happen next week? We might not be able to shut up about this game, but
you won't have any sleep either. We're going to recording the day it launches, really.
I'm waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm tired and it's time to record a 2-hour podcast. I mean, that we could do that, right?
Yeah.
You want to record a 2-hour podcast at 3 o'clock in the morning?
We should do that once in a while.
2 hours of sleep?
Yeah, just record
it. We sleep for 2 hours and we record for 2 hours. That's how we do it. This is your insomnia cast. Okay. Anyway, the point is, I love the comment. I love that they want more content. People want more content and we're happy to give content. Believe me. Yeah, 2 hours could happen. I just don't know if we're ever going to go into it kind of understanding that it'll be a 2-hour podcast. But there's always going to be a lot to talk about. And we could have reviewed every single card. We could have. There are content creators that have done that. And more power to them. It's a very time-consuming, high-production thing to do. But one day you might get your 2-hour podcast, Swoop Sauce.
That day might be next Wednesday.
Yeah, that might be next Wednesday.
Maybe next Thursday. Who knows?
But Josh, you had something you wanted to bring up.
Yeah, so I'm going to start a new segment on the show. It's time for the quick question of the week. We had a tweet come in from DragonReborn915 on Twitter today. He asked about the virtue of a 25-card deck versus 35 or, say, 40. And this has been something that's been a topic on the forums a lot, and he wanted to get our perspective on it. So he wants to know, is it just about consistency alone?
So yeah, I mean we have people on the forums that are very hashtag team 25 or team 26 if you're including your leader. I see you. But yeah, it's really about consistency. So 25 cards in a deck, it's the minimum. And traditionally in card games, playing minimum deck size where there's an option of having more than minimum, it makes it so you're less likely to draw like the quality cards that you put in your deck for a specific purpose. And with Gwent, I think it's going to, I don't think it's, I'm going to make a stance here. I'm going to make a controversial stance. And I'm going to say, I don't think that 25 card minimum is going to be the must do. And here's why.
Ooh.
I think that with the way the musters are, the way things pull from any cards that pull from your deck, and if Priscilla is going to continue to be a thing, I think you could get away with a few more if you really needed to, because there is enough cards that pull out of your deck. It makes the mulligan phase a little bit tougher, I think.
Yeah.
By which I mean the redraw phase, pardon my terminology. It makes the redraw phase a little bit tougher when you have more cards that you may want to swap out. In a very tight 25 card deck, sometimes I find myself not redrawing very much because I like all the cards I put in my deck anyway, and there's not a bunch. But you're expanding your bronze roster only because you're only ever going to have 10 cards that are not bronze.
Right.
So it's really... And I think it's maybe not even your bronze roster of units. I think where it starts to creep over 25 are the decisions you make about special cards specifically. So it's going to be balancing your playstyle around that kind of thing that's going to ultimately make the decision. But I think we're going to find decks more to the 25 card size just for consistency and quality.
So what started out as a hot take ended up with probably going to be 25 or 26.
Hmm.
Man, yeah, I was so convinced that you were going to convince me to do a 28 card deck or so.
No, I'm telling you, you can get away from 25, 26 and be okay. That's the polarizing stance I'm taking. So take that hot take.
So I feel I'm gonna be the voice of reason here. I feel like from an efficiency standpoint, you want to build a deck with the least amount of variants possible. And since we mentioned before, you can only have 10 cards that are inordinately powerful, being silver and gold. You want to have the highest chance of drawing those on your first draw and your first mulligans. Obviously, the way to get that highest percentage is to play a smaller deck. And I feel like, as we mentioned, the only decks that should be larger than 25 or 26 are decks that have muster units, because you want to actually dilute your deck then. Because if you draw more than one or two muster units, you're basically wasting the entire mechanic of that card.
Mm-hmm.
So we thank you.
So like a monster deck then, I would imagine, like with your Foglets and your Arrakis and your Neckers, all of these choices would make so. Yeah, it makes the mulligan phase harder, but if you don't have to do that, if you have one of each, then you're thinning your deck so fast anyway.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And we know from...
It's a great question.
It's true. Thank you so much for writing in, Dragon Reborn. I think every week we're going to be posting up on Twitter, maybe once or twice during the week, and try to get a couple of these questions to come in, and we'll pick our favorite one, and we'll get into it on the show.
Yeah, you may not know this about us, but we love to talk about Gwent, so giving us more to talk about is not bad. So from the forum, we had a particular thread catch our attention, and this thread in particular, do you have the title of this thread actually handy?
Yeah, so it was...
Precise Tribal Descriptions, actually. Sorry, I didn't realize that was an active link on the notes. So we'll link this in the show notes. This will be, I try to make sure that I have links to everything we talk about that would require some external reading. So this was a thread, precise tribal descriptions. And when we say tribal, we're talking about, cards that are grouped up together. So there are cards that affect all dwarves on the battlefield. We know that from Kill the Servers, and we've seen this in action. So in this particular thread, it outlined the concerns about card descriptions, and some community members are concerned because we have to rely on card art or lore knowledge to be able to tell a dwarf from an elf. How can we possibly tell the difference between a dwarf and an elf? Now, we had a short interview with somebody over in the Witcher universe about this issue. So here's Josh doing his best Zoltan.
What do you mean you didn't know the difference between a dwarf and an elf? Ah!
Always awesome. Thanks, Zoltan. That was great.
Man, I can't believe we got Zoltan to come into the studio.
Oh, man, I know. Well, you know, that's, we put that doggy door in for a reason, right? So basically, we have dwarves and we have elves. There is specific artwork, but it's not entirely clear. So I do believe, and this is just me kind of remembering, you know, we see so much information flying past us. I think there are tags that are going to be added. I'm not sure if it's going to be on the card or in the description, but I think it's going to be saying this. And I think that's the intuitive thing to do. That's the correct choice to make. So thanks again for all the feedback. As always, we welcome all feedback as we try to bring you the community quality Gwent content all the time. Once again, please send all your emails to commandershornpodcast@gmail.com, and you can always tweet at us @commandershorn. I can be found on Twitter under a new handle. I'm going by McBeardCH. I'm just going to be building my followers on that one just so I can tweet a bit more personally and not have it all come out under the Commander's Horn brand. We'd like to use the Commander's Horn brand to be more promoting the podcast and the stuff that we're planning on doing together, the content that we spoke about at the top of the show, co-op streams, maybe some specific strategic videos that we want to host, and of course the live broadcast as well. Going to YouTube as well, being on Twitch. So the Commander's Horn brand is always going to be about us and the work that we do together, whereas the McBeard stuff will be me. Again, Twitter under a new handle, McBeardCH. I'm going to continue streaming Witcher 2 every weekday, starting in 35 minutes. My stream starts at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it will be on the day that you listen to this, if it's Thursday or Friday. I will be there at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Currently just digging into Act 2. Got most of the early conversation out of the way, and now I'm down to slashing up rot fiends. So you can catch me there on Twitch @McBearded. Finally, once the Gwent footage starts rolling in and I actually have footage I can work with and not the obsolete footage from Kill the Servers, I will be uploading videos galore at McBeard on YouTube. Josh, where can people find you?
You could find me @GreyBoxerGwent on Twitter. I recommend giving me a quick follow on there. Just check out the Twitter. I'm trying to post pretty relevant stuff and answering questions. I had a deck review come in today, and I made some comments on a deck that was posted up. It was a Squirtle deck. And you know, if you want to post me some decks you've built in the database, I'd be happy to take a look at them for you. I also stream on Twitch. I don't stream every day at 3 p.m. like some people. I might stream every day at 3 p.m. playing different games than my co-host here. Occasionally, I'll play tabletop on the stream. If you want me to try out a deck of yours on tabletop, hit me up at GreyBoxerGwent. But yeah, that's twitch.tv/GreyBoxer.
All right. My thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks so much. Your support is always appreciated. But for now, until next time, farewell from both of us.
Life without old mates and booze is like woman without a rump.
Oh, boy. Well, we'll see you post-beta next week. Best of luck on the path.